Morning, I'm Tom. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Joe Jackson, 85 maybe? And I'd forgotten there was Glockenspiel in there. Nothing like good Glockenspiel first thing on Saturday morning. It wakes you up. It gets you going. It gets, you know, the corpuscles are corpulating there. Is that what they're doing? Yeah, I think so. And in the vein of music, being as we start the show out with a little bit of music, I was talking to a mechanic friend, and I made a comment about fixing a hole on a car, and commented on the Beatles, and the Beatles had that that song "Fixing a Hole," right? Remember that song, "Fixing a Hole" from Sgt. Pepper's? It's you don't remember that song? Well, tell you what I'll do. I'll try to cue it up here in a minute. But the I said, you know, the Beatles, "Fixing a Hole." Okay. Yeah. You remember that. You're old enough to remember. Well, he said, well, no, I don't know that song. I was born in 1993. I'm like, what do you mean you were born in 1993? I got shirts older than you. Goodness. Anyway, so it goes. So goes life in the fast lane, you know? It just it is what it is. So hang on one sec here. There we go. Matter of fact, my phone was cracking. I think that was him calling. No particular order of things that are of import to us on Saturday morning or any time. First one is, you know, the major study has come out that dogs are good for your health, or good for your heart, excuse me, which would be good for your health, right? We knew that. You know, it's cats who conspire to kill you. It isn't dogs. So that just take that, just write that one down. Dogs are good for your heart. Okay? We knew that. But it's good to hear it again in the automotive realm of my day-to-day thing. I wound up buying a truck this week. I don't buy many trucks because I'm not a truck guy. And anytime I buy a truck, it always turns out to be kind of an expensive proposition. I remember I bought a truck for a local school system a couple of years ago, and it was a nice truck. And I actually had a mechanic friend look at it with me. And then I proceeded to spend probably ungodly amounts of money to get it inspectable. And it wasn't overt that. So live and learn. So I don't buy many trucks, but I picked up a crew cab truck with a cap. And I want to tell you, Mr. Man, that is one long vehicle. It doesn't have the short bed. It has the long bed, manly bed, and with a cap on it. And it's a lot of fun. I was looking for something that I would use. I'm not sure I want to keep it because it's just too nice. So we're probably going to have to let it go. But that was it's noteworthy because I just don't buy trucks. And I bought a truck this week. I think the truck is longer than the ambulance. Everything now I gauge by the length of the ambulance that we have for sale. And speaking of which, I went up to an auction this week to look at a hybrid vehicle that I hadn't come up on my radar screen. But one of I don't know if it was Peter Maria mentioned it, but it was in what year was it? 2009 or 2011? I think it was 2011. Cadillac Escalade Hybrid. Now, I don't get in Cadillac Escalades when I go to the auction. I'm usually in the other direction, little tiny cars, you know, Priuses and little things, you know, something that gets gas mileage, you know, it's not going to kill you. But it was a hybrid, so I said, well, we have to look at it because it's a hybrid. And we did. And, you know, you have to climb up. You kind of need a stepladder to get up into a Cadillac Escalade. But I got up into it, and I admit, it's a nice vehicle. It's a huge vehicle. It's longer than the ambulance, probably. And I did not buy it. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I mean, it gets 12 miles to the gallon normally, and as a hybrid, it gets 20, which is a pretty good improvement. But it's like, oh my goodness. No. So I didn't get it. But it was interesting. You know, I put that on my list of experience, life experience now. I have driven a Cadillac Escalade, even though it was a hybrid. Yes, okay. I'll tell you what, we got to take a break already. It's already 8:15. Oh my goodness. Time goes too fast. But we will head out into the break. Should I play this? I can't play the whole song. We're going to start with it anyway, just because it's just such a great song. We'll be right back. It's Hot and Cold Saturday Morning. Stay with us. Hey, we're back. It's 8:20. It's Hot and Cold Saturday Morning. And let's see. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line 601-207-4478. All right, we'll turn that one down and just take a look at the text real quick. And my goodness, we have texts already. Tom, dogs and cats are good for your health. Well, you know, some cats. I mean, there's cats out there who will kill you in your sleep. You know that's true. You know that's true. Cats are hateful creatures. I do like cats. I just give me a choice between the two. I'm getting me a dog. And let's see, better be a four if you want it to last. I was having this discussion with Mike Dow this morning. Politics to me is like sports. It's my team versus your team. And the same thing holds true for trucks. There's Fords, there's Chevys. And then if you're kind of numb, you've got Chrysler products. So. Did I get a chance to compare wool wax to fluid film? No, I have not. But I have yes and no. I've got a gallon of wool wax in my shop, and I popped the cover on it. And I have to tell you, it smells great. It does not smell like fluid film. So right there, it wins. Okay, because I recently had a car that had been fluid filmed, and it has a smell. And it's not horrible, but it is obvious right after it's been applied. But I'm going to try both. And the reason I'm going to try both, are you ready for this? This was a big announcement for this morning. You kind of queued me up for it. We do have a Lyft coming. I have a Lyft on its way. It'll be here next week. And my friend Bill emailed me during the week, said, have you looked at single post Lyfts? Well, yes. And I responded to him, yes. And that's what we're getting is a single post Lyft, which is portable, so we can move it around in our shop. Doesn't take up a lot of floor space. We don't have a huge shop. And we're not lifting trucks. Although I occasionally buy trucks, I will pass them off to somebody else to do whatever needs to be done on. I will work on the little cars, the little Prius cars, and stuff like that. it's coming this week. We have to offload it with a forklift because it's heavy. It comes unassembled. So that's the big logistical hurdle this week is having something with forks on it to unload it. We've got a couple of options. We're not sure which one we're going to execute yet, but we're going to have to do it this week. I just got a text message. Ugh, fluid film, excellent product, repugnant smell. Yeah, it's kind of as the word goes, noisome. Anyway, it's not pleasant. Let's see. In between all the other stuff going, we've got a lot of cars done this week. We had a couple go out, and I seem to be getting a little momentum going with cars, getting them done. And in the middle of all this, people are calling me from all over the United States of America, ordering tanks for heat storage. Yeah. So just to keep things entertaining. We, you know, we still do make the tanks and stuff. We've kind of scaled it back slightly, but the tank business is still going. And so if I need to take a break from cars, I can sit down and order the parts for the tanks and keep that whole deal rolling and have. So that's kind of it. And got a call from a guy in Arizona who, you know, I kind of lose track of who all the people I deal with. I mean, you know, in dealing with cars, you have a lot of people coming and going, and you meet a lot of nice folks. With tank stuff, I'm usually selling the product online, and I just get to talk to them on the phone, and there's a name that kind of maybe resonates that I might remember, so I have to go back, look in invoices to see who this was and what it was. But had a guy call from Arizona who had gotten some tanks from us a few years ago and needed more. So it was nice to talk to him to catch up. I didn't ask him about the weather. I figured it's probably hot and dry where we're hot and humid. But I guess that's okay as opposed to hot and cold. It was cold this morning, as a matter of fact. Wasn't it? The chill is in the air, and it's dark again in the morning, and I find that very disappointing on Saturday mornings to get up and have it be almost dark, like nighttime dark, when I leave to come up here to do the big radio thing on Saturday mornings. Speaking of radio, I hate to have to mention it, but radio in our area lost a old timer, a guy by the name of Dutch Heiser. Remember Dutch? He'd been around. I got to meet him years ago. He worked at this station briefly. This is going back a ways, but Dutch also was a performer. Now I'm really dating myself on the Curly O'Brien show. Remember Curly O'Brien used to be on Channel 7 on Sunday afternoon? It was Curly O'Brien, Jackie, Milo on the drums. I think Dutch played bass. Anyway, we lost Dutch this week. He was a fixture on radio for many years in our area. And a nice man, very nice man, a really just a charming person. Got to meet him a couple times and told him I enjoyed him on the Curly O'Brien show. I didn't know him from radio at that point. I knew he was on radio. I didn't know he was on radio when he was on Curly O'Brien. But anyway, sorry to say we lost him this week. Let's see. Getting some text messages in here. I think it's the lanolin or the combination of the secret effective juices that smell so abhorrent. I think what it is lanolin just smells. It doesn't smell good. And the only reason we don't catch that lanolin is smells dreadful is because when they put it in hand lotion, there's all that perfume. And maybe it just is the secret sauce that keeps things going into the crevices of the rust that keep things from getting worse. So I'm going to be doing some of this. I'm going to see. I mean, yeah, I've got a small shop. Spraying lanolin in your shop might not be the best thing. We'll see. Let's see. I got a long text here. Let's see if we can read it. I was looking at some of the cheaper vehicle lifts, a few different styles, including single post, even a single post lift. The picture was lifting a half-ton pickup, Northern Tool Magazine, I believe. Do you trust those small lifts? I don't know a thing about them. Just wondering. I've gone round and round. I was going to get a four-post lift that You can. There are four post lifts that are freestanding that you can move around the shop, but they just took up too much real estate. The single post lifts, the folks who have them, I've spent years looking at these things, reading reviews, reading posts folks have put up. Folks who have them are pretty happy with them. As a matter of fact, the one I'm getting is coming from Northern Tool, I was just trying to put together the initial financing and was able to do that. I'm not in a position to pay it all at once, but can pay it over a few months. So the need is becoming more critical for me. There's so much that I cannot do because you can't get underneath a Prius easily. You could jack it up a bit, but it is kind of claustrophobic, and I'm not real crazy about being underneath a jacked up car, even with blocks and stuff. It's still not real easy to work on it compared to having, you know, before I spent much time in garages, the opportunity to go into a shop and have a car on a lift and just walk underneath it and scope everything out in seconds and look at the whole picture was just exciting for me. And because you don't get to look at that closely, and be it good or bad, it gets you right into it. You know what you're dealing with. And of course, for service, it's a lot simpler. So anyway, that's all good stuff that I'm tickled that we have the opportunity to set up. I just want to get it off the truck into the shop and get it assembled. Then I'll be okay. And they move around like a pallet jack. They're fairly stable pieces of equipment. And we'll report back. I don't know if it'll be done by next weekend, but we'll try. Well, you have to take a break, though. It's 8:30 straight up. We come back, we'll take your calls, 1-800-966-1039. It's hot and cold. Stay right there. Okay, we're back. Turn down the banjo, Tom. We're back. It's turn it down. Jeez. 8:36 here on Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line up and running, 601-207-4478. And I just want to tell you about my friend Alan over at General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer. Open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, you know the number, 989-4341. It's 989-4341. The only thing he can't help you with is banjos. I can help you with that. And, you know what? I don't know if your library has this, but the Searsport Public Library has a musical instrument lending assist setup where you can borrow musical instruments like you would get borrow a book. And I brought a banjo over there this past week, a listener. And Sam, I you had a long Italian last name, and I apologize. I just looked at the other day when I dropped off the banjo. Sam gave me a banjo, which I spiffed up a little bit. It really didn't need any spiffing up. I just tightened the head up a little and cleaned it up and brought it over to the library this week, and they are appreciative. And I guess at some point I'll go over there and torment the children, show them how to play banjo. It's for the children. It's very good. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Let's go to the phones on line one. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just recently bought a piece of property that's within the shoreline zoning. Mm. I've got water. I'm on sort of a peninsula, so there's about 100 feet of property, and then there's water actually on both sides of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reinstalling a septic system, and you know, there are a lot of restrictions when you do that on shoreline zoning. And now, one of the restrictions that I'm facing is that it has to be sort of a tertiary system. That I guess really the way to describe it is a small treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a company that it's called. And I've heard it pronounced a couple of different ways, but it's B-U-S-S-E. I think it's Busse or Bus or
mm-hmm.
No, it's a German company. And their one of their claims is that this water, that you know, by the time this water is treated, it's cleaner than rainwater. And I haven't seen it, but I've been told that part of the demonstration is that they actually have someone that drinks it.
Okay.
So I didn't know if you were familiar with that system. I mean, I've called them and talked to them. Of course, they're telling me things that are all positive. But I didn't know if you knew anybody that was familiar with that, because my concern is going to be, you know, it's electrically driven.
Yeah.
You know, in the wintertime, if I have a power failure, how is that going to hold up with things cracking, maybe with water expansion and freezing and all that? So I don't know if you're familiar with that system.
I'm not. I'm just pulling it up right now while we're talking.
Yeah.
It's a great
system.
Now, have you dealt with any folks who system design folks who is the direction they're pointing you, or do you just find this on the internet?
No, well, I thought the local code enforcement officer had suggested it, and my my son knew of somebody that had a system in it, but just through, you know, secondhand information. So I don't have their information to contact them.
Yeah, I certainly guidance from the code guy is not a bad thing. I would be checking with a system designer, because he or she ultimately may have another option that's less expensive. I share your concern about if the power goes out, does your system function at all?
Right. So this is above ground. This is actually housed in a shed. And the only thing that's in the ground is the leach field.
Okay. One possible alternate scheme would be a peat moss system, which Joan Brooks, who I've been remiss in not having on this show for a while, had invented. And she had worked with folks who had done these systems, and in Canada in particular, and the discharge was going directly into bodies of water. It was acceptable. And she lives in Eddington, so you can find her phone number online or on the phone book. And
what's her name again? I'm sorry.
Joan Brooks.
Joan Brooks, okay.
Yep.
You know, I searched the internet for, you know, different system designs, and, and she didn't come up. You know, I almost want to say that I've seen that system in South Thomaston. There's a reversing falls there, and I remember driving by, and there was an outside system that almost looked like it had peat moss laying on the top of it, and there was just a steady stream of water coming out of it, right directly into the river system.
It could be one. I've got one.
Yeah.
I've got one down in Stockton Springs. Yeah, we had a site where we needed to put the system was not very good drainage, and what we wound up doing was building, this is at Joan's instruction, we built a box out of hemlock that was 3 feet high, and we filled it with peat moss, and the design is kind of critical. The density of the peat moss has to be right. You have to use live peat moss. The stuff you buy in bags like at Home Depot is technically dead. So this was peat moss that came from Du Bois, and we had this huge truck come in, a live bottom truck.
Yeah.
Man, I had more peat moss than you could ever think about. And we might actually have those shows on YouTube. If you check YouTube and look for Hot and Cold, I think those shows are on YouTube of us actually putting in the system.
Yeah.
And
How do the solids get dealt with?
It goes into a regular septic tank, and then is pumped up into the field.
I see.
But in that case, the septic tank is usually, in our case, was fed by gravity. So gravity went downhill to the tank, and then it's pumped from the tank up into the leach field, which is higher than the tank.
I see. All right.
So
you know, I looked into incinerated systems, and to be honest with you, I don't know why. I mean, if you're that type of person, I don't know why you'd spend $10 on a system when you could buy these incinerator systems that, you know, when they're done, each use, you know, each complicated use of the toilet results in about a teaspoon worth of ash.
Yeah.
And I think the Cadillac model that I saw was about $2,000. I mean, you know, I don't know why anybody, although I'm doing it, I guess it's for resale values mostly.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're married to fuel for the rest of, you know, anybody's using the toilet or a sink is using fuel to evaporate the water off of that. So so that is a major trade-off. And I think this system you're looking at or a peat moss system, I'd be kind of surprised if some of the more advanced systems like EnviroSeptic doesn't have something that falls into that area, and it's more a little bit a simpler system. It's not, and you know, a tertiary type system like this is certainly a very high functioning system. You're going to get very clean discharge. I would not be surprised. I know EnviroSeptic just came out with a new system. They're out of New Hampshire. Company's called Presby who makes it, and I think they might have something that would fit the bill as well. Again, you might wind up pumping into something that's above ground, but you've got a traditional septic tank, and with a pump in it, and then it's pumping up into your system to discharge. And that's basically the same way the peat moss system works. And both these systems function similarly in that there's a lot of extended surface and a lot of biological stuff living there, bacteria that's breaking everything down. So by the time it leaves, it's relatively clean. So I will bet that either the peat moss system or a system like a Presby system might get you there for less money.
And you know, the other thing too was these towns are starting to require, if you and I think the town that I live in may also be doing this, they are requiring you now to have a contract because these systems apparently fail more often than not. And so they are requiring you to have a contract signed for maintenance.
That's interesting.
So, yes. So the peat moss system may or may not be acceptable. But, you know, and I understand what happens with these tertiary systems is that, you know, there's a certain amount of maintenance that has to be done. And if that's neglected, then the system fails, and we're back to, you know,
There's
why the system is in place to begin with.
There's complexity there that is not there with a, I'm going to call either of these peat moss or Presby type system a more traditional system.
Right.
You know, it's fairly simple. You've got a tank, you've got a leach field. The degree of performance of the leach field is the critical factor. And I don't think I know the maintenance with the peat moss system is you can't have big stuff growing on top of the peat moss. The Presby type system. And both these systems, I think, really a critical factor is pumping the tank out on a regular basis, so you don't get discharge of solids into the leach field and plugging things up. So anyway, I hope that's some help. I would make those phone calls.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, and I look forward to having listened to Joan Brooks. That's kind of a tough subject, but it's interesting.
Oh, it's a very interesting subject. Okay.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, you know, I live in a resource protection shoreland zone area. And when we bought the house, we were told there was a cesspool there and it needed to have a tank put in. So we had a tank put in. And the day the tank was in, and we called the local plumbing inspector to come inspect it. And while we were waiting for him, the guys who put in the tank said, you know, we got a camera. We can show you the leach field. And he grabbed the pipe that went to the leach field and it came out in his hand. And we looked in the hole, and there was a bunch of fist-sized rocks. That was the leach field. So we, the inspector came. We told him what we found. You know, we have a tank at least, a 1,000-gallon tank. So take a while to fill up the tank while we're sorting out the leach field. Had a leach field design done. We used a Presby system, and Joan. Joan designed the system for me, in that case, and it was very easy to put in. The catch was that it was a non-performing system up to that point, and right next to the water, so it was the right thing to do, and we were happy to do it to do the right. And I was doing a TV show at the time, so anything screwed up like that, I was happy because I had another TV show. But we got the system done. It was and it was fairly simple. And there's variations on the theme. And Presby has come out with some other stuff. Joan has continued to do systems with. She was last we spoke. She was doing stuff with a company in Canada. And systems that were adjacent to water that would require a little bit more filtration or performance, if you will. So anyway, let's see. What do we got here? frequent listener, happy to hear you got a lift order. Keep us posted on how I like it. I definitely will. He's thinking about doing one of these, getting one of those as well. Let's see. This looks like it's, kids question mark, banjo question mark, gozy question mark. That's child abuse. Yeah, it is. I didn't say it wasn't, but you know, if kids got to learn about banjos from somebody, might as well be me. The system we were talking about is an aerobic system. Thank you. Yeah, and you know, traditional septic system is an anaerobic system. And the difference between the two is an anaerobic system, traditional septic tank, it's kind of a sealed system. There's not a lot of oxygen in there. And anaerobic bacteria that do not need oxygen break this stuff down, goes into the leach field where there is some aerobic or activity going on. An aerobic system starts out and treats it with different bacteria, blending oxygen with it to break it down more completely and sort out the eliminate the nasties, as it were. Let's go back over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Oh, we lost him. Okay. Oh, let's see. What else? excuse me. We've got a building project coming up, we're going to put a slab down, and we're going to build a crawl space underneath this area. It'd be an addition to a building. And I've been mulling over how I want to do this. Do I want to insulate the slab? And, you know, we've talked about doing slabs and then insulating on top of the slab. I don't really want to do that in this case, so we're going to insulate underneath the slab. And been going kind of round and round with this. I'm somewhat skeptical of critters getting into insulation that's under a slab. It's in the area where ants in particular can get into it. And you know, I've advised a lot of folks on this, and I've done it enough myself. But I think what we're going to do in this case is put the foam in, put plastic vapor barrier down, put the foam on top with some borates around the foam, cover it then with another piece of plastic and pour the slab. And now we're above that, we're building a pressure treated frost wall. Let's say for the sake of discussion, it's 2 feet high. And that gives me place for mechanicals and place to crawl around because, hey, you know, what's more fun than crawling around in a space you can't, you have to be on your belly on. But we need the space. So we want to insulate the edge of the slab. And I've kind of gone around with this a lot. And I think I came up with a setup that works. And we have readily available to us, again, ground contact pressure treated lumber. So what I think we're going to do is build a little stub wall, if you will, a foot high, that will be the form, but it will also be the top sill plate that we would build off of would be integrated into this form. Inside of it, we'll have some foam and put it in place. And it may be, I've got a couple of variations on the theme. One is it's actually a mini stud wall. It's a foot high. It's got studs every something, let's say 32 inches, because it's going to be filled with concrete and foam. Sheathed on the outside with pressure-treated plywood. Wrap the whole thing with ice and water shield to protect the wood from leaching. Put it in place, make sure it's level and square, and then pour the slab up to it. And, of course, the top plate has to be level. That would be what we would screed off of. And then we just go and do our thing. The important thing with that is it's pressure-treated lumber. You got to use stainless steel fasteners. You don't have to strip the forms afterwards. You're not wasting the forms. And you've got you've got insulation there that is protected from sunlight and protected from wear and tear. And to me, that usually is the negative when it comes to insulating slab perimeters, is how we're protecting the foam and make sure it's not going to move. Well, if we integrate it into what would be basically a structure, that wouldn't happen. So that one I'm playing with in terms of how much structure do I want. Do I need to put studs there or not? I'm still kind of chewing on it. We may have a top and bottom plate and just the... it's only a foot tall, so maybe just occasional braces on the inside, and then it fills with concrete. Once it's poured, it's solid. So mulling that one over. We just got the permit, so we will keep you posted on that. And I know we're going to videotape something at some point. We didn't do the roof, the first half of the roof on the building at our shop, but we may do the second half. Anyway, we got to take a break. It's 8:54 here at the Voice of Maine. Let's see what else we got coming up. I've covered all the I've covered most of the major points of the activity. I will share this because I got about a minute here before the break. So, you know, I wear canvas duck heavy-duty pants because I wear holes in clothing very quickly. So I ordered like 5 pairs of pants. And 2 of these pairs are khaki. Well, now, khaki is not a color that is conducive to doing mechanic work. So I put them on when I got them. And, like, you know, 2 days later, it's like, oh, these got to go in the wash right away. So I put on a darker pair, and yesterday I sliced a hole in them with a knife. I've had them on for a day or two. So I've come to the conclusion that either I don't wear pants, or I have to get heavier pants, Kevlar. That's what I'm looking for. Kevlar pantaloons. That's going to be my big money making idea. Kevlar pants. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Put on your Kevlar pants and listen to the radio. We'll be back. Don't go away. No, please don't. All right, we're back. It's a 4-string banjo day, apparently, on Hot and Cold. Good morning again. I'm Tom. It's hour number 2. Big radio broadcast. It's what we do Saturday mornings. Good or bad, it's still, we're here. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. And what's better than the banjo soundtrack on a radio show? I don't know. Oh, man, I tell you what. Okay. Enough. No mas, amigo. All right. Chaps work or Kevlar with your chaps or your banjo. You can arrive at the library as a cowboy. Many moons ago in a land far, far away, I used to work in the woods, and I think they made us wear chaps, and I found them extremely annoying. And you can get the double. I can get pantaloons that have the double front. You know, there's 2 layers, but I had a pair of those, and I didn't like them. My wife picks up my pants with all the stuff in it. All the stuff I carry around, there's probably about 5 pounds of junk in my pockets, and adding an extra layer of an extra wear layer is not on my radar screen, which kind of makes me wonder. And I don't want to sound rude about this, but if you're a person who happens to have a little bit of excess weight, and how, you know, if I had 100-pound weight on my back, I would I ain't going anywhere. I'd be just stuck. And folks who have that amount of extra weight manage to get around reasonably well, all things considered. It's an interesting design thing that the human body is capable of doing those sorts of things. So Papa Bear, thanks, Papa Bear. You know, you're making me feel really wonderful. Tom, we love you, but when is Pete coming on? He'll be on in a little while. And Now, I just want to warn you all that this whole deal with Pete being on the radio has got him talking about wanting his own national radio show. He's going right national. He's not even starting, you know, he ain't starting out necessarily just local. He's ready to go national. Coast to coast, he'll tell you. He has a name and everything worked up. So I'm afraid we've created a monster, but if nothing else, he can be entertaining at times. He has his moments. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, Tom?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to put some fender flares on my truck because there's a little rust there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about putting fluid film behind the flare before I mount it on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
Is that stuff going to melt, you know, because my truck's black?
Well, it'll certainly, it'll flow probably a little bit, but I would be inclined to, before I did that, if there's already some rust there, I would get some conversion coating on it. And you can, there's a product called OSPHO, O-S-P-H-O. And what it is phosphoric acid. You can buy it by the gallon at Home Depot. It's really cheap that way. And brush it or spray it on, and it can basically, you can buy it in little bottles. They call it conversion coating. And that stabilizes the rust, and then I would either coat it with something, an appropriate paint, and then I would also put the fluid film on top of that. But I don't think, you know, if it's going to melt, it's going to melt down underneath behind the flares, and I think it'll still stay there enough to keep things pretty stable for you.
All right. What's that stuff called again?
OSPHO, or I wish I knew the trade name of, or the non-trade name. It's in a gallon jug in Home Depot, and it's blue. It's phosphoric acid is what it is. OSPHO being PHO part of OSPHO, O-S-P-H-O. PHO is for phosphoric acid. And what it does is when it hits rust, it converts rust to something that's stable that will not continue to rust.
All right. Would that be in the paint department area?
It is in the paint department, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay, you're welcome. And my friend Nat told me about it. He has a old a car carrier truck that he's been working on for the past 4 years. And if you go into where my old shop used to be, he's pulled it up right next to his shop now that I've moved out and am not cluttering things up. And he coated that 4 years ago with OSPHO, and it was rusty, and it has stabilized. It has not rusted since then. It's nasty stuff because if you use a spray, you're spraying acid. So anytime I use OSPHO, or I call it OSPHO, or I use that stuff, I always find myself, I'm spraying it, I'm always downwind, so you should wear a mask. It is pretty nasty. And I've gotten it on my face in the past, and I felt I was, you know, now doing a do-it-yourself acid peel. It burns you. It's acid. Enough said. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question for
you. Sure.
I got a small cottage down on the coast. It's about 600 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also got a walkout basement, which I'm going to turn into living space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm considering two options for heating. One is the propane heaters mounted on the wall.
Yeah.
And the other is a heat pump. I've had some bad experiences with heat pumps, but they were mini splits. I understand the single head ones are a little more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you see an advantage to one over the other?
There's a couple of aspects to this. One is with a heat pump, you have the ability to reverse it, so you can cool as well as heat, and that seems to be an advantage in this time of year. If the heat load is such, there's potential where you might not have adequate heat out of the heat pump in the really frigid times of year. If it's a cottage you're using occasionally, the heat pump will be adequate in terms of keeping it from freezing over the winter. So you can have some low, you put it on low level, 50, 55 degrees, and it would maintain it. So it probably wouldn't fall short even in the coldest weather. Whereas the Renais would obviously heat you all winter. And there'd be no
now,
issue.
As far as power outages go, this area does have fairly frequent power outages, and it's a situation because the electric company claims they don't own the poles that come down to the house.
Okay.
And I don't know how that would affect getting them repaired quickly or not, but
yeah.
Would the Renais be able to heat without the electricity?
No.
No.
You have to have electricity for Renai. The only heater I know of that would be appropriate would be an Empire heater. Empire heaters would function without electricity. And our friends at General Appliance and Brewer do sell those. And they're quite affordable. They're actually probably less expensive than the Renais. They're not as fancy, but they are direct venting. And that's a big advantage, you know, in using those kind of things.
Do any of those Empires come with the fans, with blowers? I have some Empires at my camp.
Okay.
And I use them. Yeah. But they don't have blowers.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I haven't looked at them lately. I have a feeling you can get them with fans. It'd be worth a phone call to Alan and just see what he can certainly answer that question better than I.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. We got to take a break. It is, it's 9:16 and, here we go. Here we go. When we come back, we'll take some more phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. A text line 601-207-4478. Hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back. It is 9:20. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. You knew all that. My name's Tom. You knew that too. I what you didn't maybe know, or you forgot, because I forgot, Tuba Skinny was in Belfast last week, and this happens to be them in the background. I think they're somewhere, they're performing in Maine for the next few days. If you Google them, you can find out where they are. I have a feeling they're down in Newcastle or Damariscotta or somewhere today. Anyway, here we go. A little bit of, anyway, they were down in the street for free this week, Thursday night. And I said, oh, I'm going to go see them, and I completely forgot. That happens. Anyway, they very, very, very capable group of New Orleans street musicians who play the way the music was meant to be played. And can't say enough good things about them. They are gifted young people. And we go over to line one. We can talk to folks. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. This is Cal.
Hey.
Listened to your show quite a bit.
Good.
And I just heard some guy called about an Empire heater.
Yes, sir.
We have one of those in our cabin.
Mm-hmm.
We use it year-round, and that you can order those with a fan. It's just a 110 plug-in fan, and it's very easy to mount in. It's on the lower left side of the unit.
Okay.
And it comes with a thermostat if you want to put a thermostat with it.
Good.
Yeah, very easy to work with.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you. I appreciate your call.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, you know, simple is good at times. I mean, the Renai has got all kinds of little electronic gewgaws, but sometimes that isn't what you need, especially if you have power outages. It's nice to have the ability to still have some heat running, so which is the why Alan sells them, because he sells a lot of gas appliances for folks who would be maybe off the grid, or not necessarily because they want to be, but because they've got a camp out in the middle of nowhere. So that does make a difference. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. And both are quiet right now. And, you know, Pete might be dealing with cut. We might not get Pete today. Well, much to all our chagrins. But then again, he might be dealing with customers and making me money. So I will accept that, and you will have to accept it as well if he doesn't call in. I have a feeling, though, he'll be available. We have to prepare our driveway, actually both at my house and at the shop, for winter. And I've been mulling the different options. And the one that I'm coming up with that I like, because basically it's cheap and I like the way it looks, is crusher dust. And I've used it in the past and was pretty pleased with it. And I have friends who have used it in their driveways. And I think that's where we're headed. The road we're headed down right now, as opposed to gravel or pea stone or anything else. curious if anybody out there in Radio Land has used crusher dust and what they think of their end result. My thought, it's quite affordable. So that's obviously a big plus as well. Let's do this. Let's go back to the phones, and we'll figure that one out. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I have a question for you here. A year ago,
You're breaking up on me. I guess we lost you. I'm sorry. Give us a call back when you get more bars. On your phone, not anywhere else. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to say I had one of the Empire heaters in the thermostat. You may want to get an aftermarket thermostat because I had a lot of trouble with the thermostat. I had two of them, and both thermostats were broken within a month. They just didn't hold up to what you needed.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up getting an aftermarket, but they definitely will heat everything in there. A great heater.
Good.
It'll take a large area.
Good.
All right, good to know. Well, I just figured I'd throw my two bits into that.
I appreciate
it. Your time.
Okay, thanks.
Have a great day.
You too.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah, good to know. I mean, you know, it's interesting that would be the weak point, but so it goes. Let's go over to line one. Hit the buttons. Here we go. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Good morning. Let me turn the volume down.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a heat pump question.
Sure.
About hybriding, possibly using it as far as radiant heat in slabs.
Mm-hmm.
But also taking advantage of the air conditioning in the summer.
Mm.
Is there a combination that you can be designed that you switch over in the summertime?
Yeah, there actually is. We have somebody who's doing that. The heat pump works extremely well. An air source heat pump that's making hot, in this case, hot antifreeze, works very well with a radiant slab because it can use, it keeps the efficiency of the heat pump up because it's not having to get super hot. So that works well, but you can't use that for cooling in the summer because if the floor drops below the dew point, you get condensation and mildew and stuff. So our other phone is ringing here. That was nice. Hang on. Let me put that there. Stand by, Pete. Pete's on the other line. So what you would do for the summertime is you would use a fan coil and it would have to be a fan coil that has a condensation pan in it because as you run the air through the fan coil to cool the room down, you're going to be condensing out moisture. So a little drip pan. The guys I work with who sell the heat pumps, we do have those units available. So you can, and you could just manually swap it over from the heating season to the cooling season.
Okay, and it doesn't impact the radiant system sitting there idle, non-circulating.
No, not going to hurt a thing.
Okay, and then now a lot of them don't warranty their heat pumps if you hook it to an emergency generator. Is that correct, or is technology?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I've not had that come up, but I could see where there could be a potential problem. There's a lot of electronics in heat pumps, any heat pump at this point, and I would be a little concerned about that, and it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case.
Okay. All right. Then the other step is the water heater. How do you include that as a zone or something?
You could.
In your radiant heat.
You could. You could.
But that would be a higher temperature. And
that would be okay because the water heater is running, it's bringing in, say, 40-degree water in the wintertime. So the bottom of the tank is 40 degrees. You're going to have a water heater with a heat exchanger so you can interface with the heat pump, which is usually running antifreeze. And that'd be fine. And that works extremely well.
Okay, so you can actually have a hybrid system that'll run your hot water, give your convection heat and also give you air conditioning in the summertime.
You could. The limiting factor here is whatever the heat load of the building is and cooling load of the building, but the short answer is yes, they can do all those things properly sized.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Wonderful. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, if I hit the button, then we go over to line two. Is that you, Pete?
That is me. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm living the dream.
Okay, so...
Radio Land. How is everyone today?
Good. Stand by the door because you're breaking up a little bit.
Okay, hang on.
And Pete, I want to read you, because you don't listen to this radio show except when you're on with me. I got a text message from Tom up in Sangerville. He says, Tom... You know we love you, but when is Pete coming on?
So, I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. Yeah, thanks, Tom. I mean, you know, my ego is fragile enough. But Pete is my son. At least that's what we believe. So what's going on, Pete?
Well, you're not going to believe this. We had some cars go out this week.
Yes.
Nobody took me up on the Foreman grill thing. I still have the Foreman grill. So, you know, it's still available. If somebody wants to come buy a car, you'll get a Foreman grill.
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, you think that thing would have flown right out of here.
you know, it is clean. I'm not making that up. There's not little bits of hamburger and stuff stuck to it, you know.
Yeah.
So, I actually, you know what, I've got a personal errand I've got to attend to on the air this morning.
Okay, what's that?
Real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick. If Stephen King is listening.
Yeah.
Stephen, I need to take a picture with you where you're handing me a candy bar. I can't really explain why. It'll take 60 seconds. I don't celebrity gush. I'm not going to have you, like, autographing stuff. You know, just real quick, a stoic photo of you handing me a candy bar.
Okay.
So if we could set that up, that'd be great. I already emailed your website about it, so I'm sure they'll be passing that along to you shortly.
I'm sure they will be. You know, I have to tell you a quick story. You might remember this, but way back when I was on a radio station that belonged to Stephen King. And
I remember.
We were a talk radio station at the time, and everybody was dismissed except for me. And then this station started up, and they said, you could play as much banjo music as you want.
So, well, you got a face for radio, so.
Yeah, well, you know, so it all kind of worked out, I guess.
Yeah, I figured the picture thing would be pretty easy to set up because, like, he's one of the most well-known people in the state. I'm probably the second or third most well-known at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just that the text messages are coming in here. Hello, Pete. Oh, boy. That's a long one.
Nah,
I can't read that. It's too long. Although it said, hello, Pete. They're suggesting hello. I get Duluth Trading Company pants. If you want to buy me a pair, go ahead, but I ain't paying $50 a pair for pants. I am a cheap bastard.
Isn't Duluth that company where they don't actually have pictures of the pants? It's
just
like a drawing?
Yeah.
I don't buy from them. Forget that.
Well,
it's 2019. Let's see a picture of them.
Yeah. I bought a Duluth a jacket, and based on the drawing, and it's the same material as the pants I wear. It's that heavy canvas duck. And it actually is.
I like that stuff.
It is nice stuff. It's got pockets galore. It's well made, but I ain't paying $50 for pants. I know I'm going to ruin, because that's what I do. That's you know that as well as anybody.
Oh yeah, they're work clothes.
Pete, you
get a new pair. You got about 3 weeks before you tear a hole in them on something.
Yeah. Well, it seems whenever I cut a hole in the pants, I'm dangerously close to parts that I don't want to have knives near. But that's another story. Pete, I got to take a quick break here. So can you hang on?
Yeah, I got nowhere to be.
Okay. All right, so let's hit the tunes, and we'll be right back. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. Pete's here, and we're not letting him go. Stay there. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back to 9:38, and one guy I know who accentuates the positive every day of his life is my boy, Pete. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. What was that buffer music we were just listening to?
That's NRBQ.
Ah, woof. How about some Dean Martin or something, huh?
Hey, you don't go dissing NRBQ. Mike Dow and I are going to come down and kick your posterior.
Hey, I'm 38. You guys are retired.
Hey, that's we got big sticks, though.
Yeah, well,
anyway,
see what happens.
Yeah, so Pete, we do have a lot of cars. We're getting back. We're getting our inventory caught up again.
We are. It's starting to look like we might be a car dealership.
Yeah.
We ought to think about that professionally.
What a concept. And We've got some gray ones.
You know, the I had talked a couple weeks ago. I'd mentioned we'd gotten a Prius V in that was really nice.
Yeah.
Like a really nice one.
Yeah.
That I put out for sale, and 4 hours later it was sold.
Yeah.
And whenever that happens, I always have one immediate thought.
Mm-hmm.
We should have asked for more.
How do we do it and stay in business? I don't know. No, that was a nice car, and the folks who came in actually bought two cars, and they're very nice folks. Hi to Bob and Mark and Karen. We appreciate you coming down and visiting with us.
They didn't want the Foreman grill, though.
They didn't want the Foreman grill. They
now,
just Karen got
told me she'd actually just gotten rid of hers.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, she could have taken it and got rid of that one too.
Oh, she knew. Apparently, she knew what to do with them. I don't know what to do with it, so I'm trying to give it away to people.
Because
it's still good. I mean, I figure if you don't have like a maybe, I don't know, maybe your stove's broken or something, but you still want mediocre hamburgers.
Yep, you're really selling this thing, aren't you?
I'm not. Hey, there's truth in salesmanship. I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay.
I'm sure you can make other things on it, and they would taste okay.
All right. Let's see. We've got a. I got an interesting text message here. I'm not sure how this this goes. It says this isn't for the on air, but I had to ask an expert, so we'll try to find one. I have a Friedrich heat pump, was hooked up, worked for a year and a half, was worked on, quit again, want to get one from you. How do I contact your business? The heat pumps are online at heatingstuffllc.com, all one word, heatingstuffllc.com. They're also on eBay, and you can see them there as well. So that takes care of that.
I think when he said not for on air, he meant like don't read this on the air.
It's too late.
To respond.
No, I mean we got no phone calls right now. 1-800-966-1039. And I can only talk to Pete so much. Pete and I talk all week, so.
Oh, it gets so exhausting. By the end of the week, we're just shouting at each other, throwing things across the office. You think we're joking.
Yeah. You remember, I was thinking about it last night. We had posted on our website a picture of you and I with two knives pointed at each other. Remember that?
Yeah. That was in good taste.
Yeah, that was really good taste. And somebody had something negative to say about that. They just don't understand the family dynamic. I mean, take that picture out from somewhere. We got a phone call here coming in, Pete, so let's go over to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning.
Hey.
I have a question. I have a sheetrock in my bedroom and stuff. I want to put wood over it.
Yep.
Can I just put Taipar, black tap paper, resin paper up there?
So this is, you've got sheetrock. This is already a finished wall that presumably is insulated.
It's insulated, but it doesn't have the mud and tape on it.
Oh, I got you. I'm not sure you need to put Taipar or anything up over that. If you're concerned about air leakage, you could just consider caulking the joints. They don't have to be pretty at this point, but. The sheetrock does act as a very good vapor, air barrier, and by just sealing all the joints in between the sheets and sealing where the sheet meets the floor and the ceiling, you're going to get a pretty effective barrier.
Oh, okay. Awesome. That'd be a lot cheaper.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Right. Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. I always get a kick out of it when somebody has a baby with them when they're talking on the show.
Right at that last second there, you could hear him.
Yeah, yeah, I heard him in the beginning. I wasn't sure if that was feedback or something, but that was a child.
He's like, "This show is boring."
Yeah, well, you know, when we had the TV show back on years ago, we used to be up against Yogi Bear. It was like 6:30 on Saturday morning, and we beat Yogi Bear in the young people rating. You know, 6 years old to nine or something like that. We kicked.
They didn't know what channel they were on. They're waiting for Yogi Bear.
We kick Yogi's butt, man. Let's go over to line two. Good morning. You're on Hello. The Voice of Maine.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. I'm putting a pellet stove in my house this winter,
mm-hmm.
and I have an oil burner in the basement,
mm-hmm.
and I also bought. A heat pump hot water tank that's running now in my basement.
Yeah.
So how should I do that? Should I shut the hot water tank down altogether?
No, you could, well, the you could set up a heat pump water heater so it'll run just electrically. If you're not using the, you don't have any heat running in the basement.
Right.
And I believe you could set these up automatically anyway. So if it gets to a certain temperature in the basement where it's inefficient for the heat pump to operate, it'll switch right over to just straight electric.
Oh, okay. I just put it in this summer, and it runs fantastic.
Yeah.
I love
it. And your basement's probably nice and dry, too.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah, just check the manual, but I believe there's an automatic setting, and it'll just kick off the heat pump if it gets too cold.
Okay, one more quick question.
Sure.
I've got to put insulation in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to come down at least 2 feet from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations for that?
Well, yeah, you should go a foot below, at least a foot below ground level on the inside.
Yeah.
And you can use pretty much anything there. They do make a vinyl-faced fiberglass that's 4 feet wide that you can hang from the sill. That would work. You could use foam. Either would be fine. You could even have it spray foamed if you wanted to.
Okay, but what would be the most economical?
The fiberglass would be the cheapest.
Fiberglass.
Yeah, and you can get it with a vinyl facer on it, so it's very, it's relatively easy to put up.
Okay, do you know the R value on it offhand?
Oh, it's probably around 13.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. You, and you probably
Thank
have
you
to check
much.
With, you're welcome, check with a lumber yard. They're going to be the place that you would get that. Pete, you had your basement spray foamed.
I did. I had it spray foamed with 2 inches of polyiso from floor to ceiling.
Yeah. And that made a heck of a difference. And that was an old rock mortar basement, so that made a big difference.
That house was from 1850, so there was stuff shifting around and there were doorways and stuff. There wasn't a stitch of insulation in that entire building. I don't know how a building exists from 1850 to 2015 when the insulating was done without anybody saying, you know what, I might shove something in this wall just to keep it a little bit warmer.
Yeah.
But that solved all the issues with doorways shifting and cracking plaster and all that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I had them do 2 inches of spray foam top to bottom in the basement, and then they dense-packed cellulose in all the walls, and then I blew cellulose in behind the knee walls and the cap and all that good stuff. And then I insulated the knee walls with rigid board, and then I just kept looking for places to insulate things. But I don't live there anymore, so that's not my problem.
Yeah. Let's go over to line one. We got another call. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question about a hot roof in a house I bought about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was built 10 years ago. It's the rafters are 6x6. Finished hemlock 4 foot on center.
Mm-hmm.
It was sheathed over with shiplap and then 2 inches of rigid insulation, another layer of 2 inches of rigid insulation,
mm-hmm.
strapped with 2x4s, no venting, and then plywood shingles, tire paper, plywood shingles.
Yeah.
And it's dripping in the wintertime, so there's an air leak somewhere.
Mm.
And I'm wondering what the best way to seal that up would be, because I'm worried about mold and the drips get annoying.
Yeah.
In the wintertime.
I guess I would try to divine where the leak is or where the air leakage is, and the simplest way may be to get and you should have this as a toy anyway, as a thermal imaging camera. If you have like an iPhone or an Android phone, you can get a thermal imaging camera for $200 or less, and you may be able to scope out where the air leak is because it's going to show up as a cold spot. And that might be the simplest way to fix it. In terms of where, if you're having any mold starting to show up on the wood, you can get a product called Moldex at Home Depot, and you can treat the wood to protect it from molding.
Would caulking the seams in the shiplap where it's shrunk over the years go a long ways towards stopping the air leaks, or is that?
If you're having moisture coming in, you've got a big enough air leak there that you really have to try. The short answer is no. The longer answer is what I'm starting with, is that you've got to find where the leak is. it may be down at the eave area. It's, you know, kind of hard to say. I don't know how it was constructed, but you know, with 4 inches of foam with two layers, if the joints were overlapped, it shouldn't be leaking, except if it's a hole somewhere that somebody didn't seal, like maybe a vent pipe going up through. Although any penetration that went up through the roof should have been sealed with foam, canned foam.
Okay.
All
right. I'll check out the thermal imaging camera.
Yeah.
That should get me started.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, you can get on eBay and look for them used as well. They don't wear out. So,
Where was he getting moisture from? I was a little confused on that.
It was dripping.
Moisture air was going up and condensing?
Yeah, it's just dripping inside through the shiplap. So it's not clear where the problem is, other than it's leaking inside the house.
Hmm.
And that's never a good thing.
No, I guess not.
That's why that attention to detail is pretty critical. You have to use sealants. You can't just expect that you've got foam there and you screw it down and it's going to be tight enough.
Yeah.
We've learned that.
Seal the seams.
Yeah, we learned that.
Use tape, use caulk.
Learned that the hard way. So let's see. We got time for another call here, Pete. Good morning. You're on the voice. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me good?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. So I got a 220-year-old house. Moved in it last year. Had to put a brand new propane furnace in. Kept the thermostat about 54 degrees and put in about $3,400 worth of propane over the winter.
Wow.
So I got some spray foam, three or six tanks, you know, a total of 1,800 square feet, and sprayed. There was brick above the granite boulders,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I sprayed the brick, but I thought I just heard you talking to Pete. He sprayed 2 inches of foam from top to bottom, and I was wondering if I haven't used all my foam up, and I'm wondering if I should be spraying the rest of the wall, because I would think that the granite boulders act as some type of insulation when they're that thick, don't they?
Not really. Where it's above grade, which is where the brick is normally, is the major heat loss area. But the problem with the old rock mortar basement is that there's a lot of holes. So even though they may be below grade, there's paths where air is coming through. So I find that when, as Pete said, when you seal all that, you're doing two things. You're cutting the airflow. You're insulating what is not very insulative. And you're also keeping critters out and water out. So all that works to your advantage. I'm not sure that would make a big difference, but it is probably going to save you 25%, I bet, of your heat loss.
Yeah, what I did do is I put a 6 mil poly on the border between the brick and the boulders,
mm-hmm.
and then I sprayed the brick. So now the poly is being held by that spray foam.
Okay.
So I solved the moisture problem.
Okay.
Now the 6 mil doesn't do much for insulation. But I noticed that the basement stayed at an even 43 degrees last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking that if I solve the major problem, then maybe the basement will stay at, 10 degrees warmer, and that'll make a big difference in the house.
So
the other thing I did.
Excuse me. You have a heating system in the basement?
Yeah, I had to put a brand new propane in because there was an oil there,
okay.
and the tank was going to go on me, I think.
Yep, okay. So go ahead. I got about a minute left, so go ahead.
Okay, just one real quick thing. I'm putting two pellet burners in there in my house next week, and I don't know if you are aware, but I'm told that pellet burners need to be stamped EPA compliant by May of 2020.
Yep.
And if they're not, then they have to scrap them. So they are selling them at a discount now.
Well, you know, the EPA is not going to come to your house and say, hey, you're in trouble. Take this thing out. But what's going to happen is the vendor who, if a vendor sells one to you, he or she could get in trouble. If a private person sells you a EPA non-EPA stove, nobody cares. So that right. You know, there's wiggle room there. Pellet stoves generally.
Well, if you want to buy a new one, now's the time to do it.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It would be. That being said, the new stoves are going to be cleaner, but the pellet stoves are generally very clean devices anyway, compared to any other kind of solid fuel device. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, just a quick thing on. You know, if you're not heating the basement, I think there's reason to insulate the whole basement wall. And 43 degrees ain't very warm.
No, that's pretty close to the cutoff point. I'd say if he's got the spray foam and he's got nowhere else to put it, just keep going down as far as you can.
Yeah, yep. And Pete, I guess we're just about out of time.
Well, shoot.
So, oh, pshaw. So I guess... I guess I'll come down and hang around with you for a while.
Now, why don't you go home and get some sleep, and
okay.
Then come by maybe around 2.
All right, 2 o'clock? That sounds like a plan.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
All right.
I'll talk to you later, Keith. Pete. My name's not Keith. No, Keith. I was going to tell you, Keith is coming by, so I was going to tell you that. He's going to bring some manure. So I got to go. We're out of time.
All right.
See you later.